This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by the live coverage of the election. We go into extended coverage on Tuesday. Can't wait for that to happen. Starts at 3 with special guests, including Todd Herman and many, many, many of the candidates who are up for election. All thanks to Northgate Rare Coin Shop. Thank you so much for being such tremendous sponsors. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? A Jason Rant exclusive.
A 13-year-old student, an eighth grader, recorded his teacher trying to convince him to stop supporting Donald Trump and the president's immigration policy. This teacher spent about 10 minutes all in trying to get the student to agree that the immigration policy has been a failure and that Trump's comments are racist. This is the latest in a long string of incidents where teachers are bringing their political bias into the remote learning environment. And had it not been for this kid, this eighth grader, who was wise enough and quick enough to record this on his cell phone, none of this would have likely come to light. Now, the irony in all of this, the most maddening part in all of this, is that the district claims the teacher did nothing wrong. The teacher's name is Connor Seaman. He assigned his language arts class over at Copachuck Middle School in Gig Harbor with a simple task. Tell him who your hero is and provide sources explaining your reasoning. Now, this particular student, whose name we're keeping private because of his age, he chose Donald Trump. He chose Donald Trump in part because of his immigration policy and specifically the border wall. Now, Seaman, this teacher, had an issue with the assignment and told this student, hey, could you stick around a little bit? Just want to have a quick chat after our class. And he did. And I'll be clear, it started off very, very reasonable. And it started off correct. This teacher was having a conversation about proper sourcing.
What sources are you using?
I'm using President, like the White House governor, like President Donald Trump is working on expanding opportunity, like for a lot of
the name of the website?
Whitehouse.gov.
So it's the president's website that's saying it?
Yes.
Okay, you might want to try some different sources. Let me put it this way. It's kind of like if you're trying to look up information about someone who thinks they're a hero, based on stuff that they're approving themselves. So you're going to want different sources. Does that make sense, Aiden?
That is totally, totally, totally fair. That is 100% fair. You don't go to the White House as a source on a story like this. You can use it for supplemental value, but you got to get other sources. Totally fair. However, things started to take a very sharp turn to the left from that point on. Very sharp turn. After this, this teacher launches into a rebuke to try to, in my view, discourage this student from thinking Trump has been successful when it comes to the border wall.
So, like, I mostly know about this because of my own research. There's only, like, a lot of the wall that's been built has mostly just been replacing old wall that was already there.
I mean, it wasn't really a wall. It was kind of like a fence, you know?
Right, but it's still a barrier.
Yeah.
And the promise was to make a wall all along the border, and only like 100 miles, I think, is the number out of the 3,000 total miles has actually...
It's more than that, by the way. You should ironically check your sources.
Actual structures?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's more than that.
He's right. The student just schooled his teacher. He is right. Now, it becomes very clear that this is not just a simple conversation about sourcing. This is a conversation that devolved into the teacher, Connor Seaman, telling the student that his concern over immigration, not really all that important, nor should it be.
I guess my question to you, why is it heroic to make a wall to keep out immigrants?
Well, it's illegal to do that. So he's basically like making the law, like, better, and, like...
But it's illegal to, like, jaywalk also.
That is true, but are we going to pretend jaywalking and illegally crossing into this country are on the same wavelength? Are we going to... I mean, if we're going to pretend that, thank you for letting me know. I just want to be on the same page.
Should we paint a crosswalk at the border of the country so then it is illegal
Let's
to jaywalk
call it
into the
jaywalking
country?
Jaywalking at that point.
Because that's illegal.
I mean, is it really illegal immigration or is it just jaywalking across countries? I think we should maybe do some branding changes. This is what this is about. That's what this is all about. It has nothing to do with sources. It doesn't really even have anything to do with trying to make the case in a logical way that Trump is a hero. This is simply, I don't like why you think Trump is a hero, and I'm going to do whatever it is I can to convince you that you are wrong, including downplaying immigration. Apparently, it's not all that bad.
What would be a bigger accomplishment? Lowering murder rates or lowering illegal border crossing?
Probably murder rates.
Right. Because, like,
right, you gave the right answer.
People, like, how does it affect you that someone is crossing the border illegally?
It kind of like affects us because, like, it could be like illegal and like they could be like terrorists and stuff because like they haven't gotten their background yet.
Yep, he's right. That is a concern. Now, when I listen to this and I watch the video of which is available right now at KTTH.com, in fact, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link so you can actually watch the full video. To me, this seems very clear that this is another attempt at indoctrinating a kid to provide them with propaganda, to tell them that their political position is wrong because they don't hold the same position that you want them to hold. Now, I had reached out to the Peninsula School District for a comment, and their spokesperson, her name is Amy Gordon, responded, "The comment that the teacher tried to convince the student he was wrong for supporting President Trump's immigration policy is not accurate. They disagree with my analysis." That's fine. Let's get into what they said. Quote, "The student and teacher spoke about immigration policy and the teacher's intent in the context of providing evidence for why President Trump is a hero. The teacher's intent was to encourage the student to use more than one source for his assignment." Now, the intent, maybe that was the case, right? I agree. At the beginning, I had no problem with this call. I don't think any reasonable person would have a problem with this conversation. But to claim that this has nothing to do with convincing the student that he's wrong for supporting the president's immigration policy, when in the same conversation he says...
So, like, it gets back to the question, how much of a benefit is it to a society to stop illegal immigration in higher degrees like that when there's other crimes out there? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess.
I thought this was about sourcing. I thought this was about arguing about heroism. That's not what he's doing here. He is getting the kid to question his concern over immigration. That's exactly what this is. Now, the district did, in fact, concede to me that part of the conversation became more political in nature. Uh-huh. Part of it? I mean, the vast majority of it. They spent, what, 39 seconds talking about sourcing? Maybe a minute talking about sourcing out of an 11-minute video? This wasn't about sourcing. This was indoctrination. Now, the parent reached out to the school. The parent had a conversation with the principal. I was told by the parent that the principal said it would be illegal or is illegal for them to have videotaped the remote learning class. And not only that, in the email to me, the school sent me the handbook with the implication that the student violated the handbook for videotaping what ended up happening and then, of course, shining a giant spotlight on potential ideological abuse that's happening on campus. Number one, it's not illegal because you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy when you're in the middle of a public remote classroom. Especially because I'm pretty sure, even at this school, they record all their remote classroom video. Number two, it's also not against the handbook policy, because This is the kind of nerd I am. I looked at the handbook policy to which they actually linked, not thinking maybe I would scroll up a couple pages when it says very clearly these rules apply to using your cell phone on campus, which the student was not. Now, I don't want this teacher fired. I don't want you sending nasty emails, because I know that sometimes people do that. That's not what this story is about. This story is supposed to be, to you, a reminder that teachers like this are pulling this stuff, well-intentioned or not, in the classroom, and you have to be aware of it. You have to be having conversations with your kid. You should be talking to them about bias. You should be talking to them about what it is they learned at school. You need to be aware so when something like this happens, you can do what this mother did, which was advocate for her son. Fight for her son. Call the schools out because it's inappropriate. Stop teaching kids what to think. Teach them how to think. And if you're concerned that they're going to think the wrong thing, that is a huge red flag internally for you and your bias. Now, I would love it if you would watch the entire video and, of course, post it on Facebook and Twitter to shine a spotlight on this. Spent a lot of time blurring out faces. I mean, I didn't. It was the web person did. Steven, who did the video, he did. But I had to listen to him complain about spending so much time blurring out portions of the video for privacy.
You know, I did my own research on this story, Jason. Every other kid in that classroom for this assignment, their hero, Jason Rantz.
Well, that's obvious. I didn't think we needed to say that. I thought that that was...
All 29 of them. It was crazy.
30.
Well, I thought this kid was the 30th.
No, he's 31.
Oh, okay. All 30.
Yeah. And at the end, it did also say, I only learned about Trump because I listened to the Jason Rantz show.
It's amazing. There is hope in the next generation.
Text Rantz, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. And I'll send you a link to the story. When we come back, law enforcement unions here in Washington State, they're pushing a ballot initiative that you are going to love. We'll tell you what it is. Keep those text messages coming, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770 if you want to help shine a spotlight on the political bias that is happening on our campuses. Whether it's high school, middle school, college, doesn't matter. It's happening, and it's on all of us to expose it. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Crime.
So a coalition of law enforcement unions here in Washington State are pushing for a ballot initiative that would require cities and counties all across Washington to have detailed, printed policies, plans for dealing with protests. More importantly, and arguably more controversial to the cities, to the counties, is that this state initiative would let citizens get damages from the city or from the county government if there is any damage done to them or their property, if the local government in charge doesn't enforce the plans that they detailed. This is a brilliant move that helps stop situations like CHOP from happening again. What did we have with the Capitol Hill occupied protests or the Capitol Hill autonomous zone? 6-block radius on Capitol Hill in Seattle, taken over by radicals. Radicals with an agenda. And their agenda led them to a violent takeover of a city in which Mayor Jenny Durkin said, you do you. She was the one who ceded over the 6-block radius to the radicals. She was the one who ordered the police department to leave the precinct. And it was the city that came up with a policy that said, cops, you can't go into the CHOP zone. People were hurt. People were killed. Businesses were damaged. If this becomes law, if it gets on the ballot, the city of Seattle would have to pay deeply for that. It would be codified into law. I love this because it gives an incentive to a city to stop, for example, the near nightly riots that we experienced for weeks in Seattle. The coalition here includes executives from the Seattle Police Officers Guild, the Washington Council of Police and Sheriffs, the King County Corrections Guild. But of course, the ACLU is against this because they've decidedly taken this anti-police turn with their positions. Throughout all of this, at least the ACLU of Washington, and I believe nationally, has done the exact same thing. They side with the activists who are calling for the defunding of police. They put out a statement late yesterday, according to the Seattle Times, and the ACLU of Washington said, "This unnecessary initiative duplicates existing permitting processes." No, it doesn't. "Exposes cities to lawsuits." Yeah, it does, because they deserve to be exposed to lawsuits. "And distracts the government and its agents from their number one priority, which should be protecting people's constitutional rights, including the freedoms of speech and assembly." That does this. But it also provides protections for the people who don't want to be held hostage by activists who think that they can violently overtake a community. This also allows for those of us who disagree with the activism to not have to become victims as business owners, watching helplessly as a mob of criminal activists destroy the business, the neighborhood, the city. The ACLU doesn't seem to put all that much care into protecting those folks. They're here to protect the people who walk down the street, starting out peacefully, and then turning violent. But the ACLU of Washington, time after time, pretends that there's been no violence whatsoever. These are just peaceful protests. It's absurd. It's wrong. And I imagine there's going to be some significant dollars being put into defeating this initiative if it were to make it to the next ballot. On its surface, it should have no problem whatsoever making it onto the ballot. This is something that, regardless of where it is you live, be it Seattle or Squim, Everett or Snohomish, University Place or Spanaway, this is something that makes sense to majorities of people. And that's why the ACLU is against it. That's why I imagine city leaders like Jenny Durkin or Victoria Woodards are going to come out against something like this. They don't want to put their plans on paper. Which seems to me that if you cared about protecting freedoms of speech and assembly, you would, in fact, want a policy that's written out by the cities to ensure that the only time they get involved in breaking up any kind of demonstration is one where it's no longer protected speech. The ACLU doesn't want that. They don't want to live in that world, because then they'd have to come out and say, okay, maybe you do have a point that the second someone, you know, throws a Molotov cocktail at a police station, probably no longer considered a peaceful protest. They don't want to actually say that. I don't think I've ever seen a statement come out talking about that. They talk around the issue of violence. That's what they do now. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. Welcome back to the Jason Rants Show. We are live on this Tuesday afternoon. Some interesting news coming out of a very, very important race. The race for the next Supreme Court justice. We are fans of Federal Way Judge Dave Larson. He's come forward to say that a high-ranking member of the judiciary and a supporter of his opponent contacted him and, quote-unquote, suggested that he withdraw from the campaign. What happens if he doesn't? Joining us on the line is Judge Dave Larson. Judge Larson, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you for having me again. I appreciate it.
If you don't withdraw from the campaign, what's supposed to happen?
Well, special interest groups would then venture to destroy my career. So I stuck with it, and here I am.
When did you get this threat?
It was the day I filed, back in May.
How did it come to you?
A phone call.
How did it go? I mean, imagine when you picked up, you weren't expecting to be threatened in that way.
Well, it wasn't hostile necessarily. It was it was in the bottom line is the real issue is it kind of solidified what we have in the system is basically we don't have any contested elections. We have 87 judges that have been appointed in Washington since 2013 that have never had a challenger. Governor Inslee has appointed 111 out of 205 judges, and there's a system that depends a lot on money and a lot on, and it's kind of taints the entire system. And so it was more symbolic of how special interests have kind of hijacked mm-hmm. the judiciary.
Well, you know,
the idea that
you just real quickly, because you say it wasn't hostile, I imagine you meant in tone, but I mean, it certainly sounds like when someone says, if you don't drop out of a campaign, you're going to be destroyed. That does sound inherently hostile and threatening.
Well, when you're a judge, you end up, you know, being able to take things a little differently than other people would. And bottom line is that if I thought it was something that I still would have done the same thing if I thought it was, whether it's a threat, whether it's a suggestion, mm-hmm. whatever, it's just I take it to heart. You consider those things because, you know, certainly you're running against somebody that's considered to be an incumbent justice and it's going to potentially have an impact. So, but the bottom line is that it was, you know, I had almost withdrawn and I thought, I'm not going to do it. It's too important. There's too many things happening.
Yeah.
Both in the judiciary and outside the judiciary, and I can't walk away from this. I mean, our founders were willing enough to give up their lives, fortunes, and sacred honor, and somebody's going to embarrass me. So I ran for the right reasons, and I stuck with it. And it kind of became irrelevant at some point. But as time goes on, when your judicial ratings are dropped, you know, when you 4 years later, your judicial ratings are lower than they were 4 years earlier. You know, those kind of things start happening, and it's kind of like, well, you just got to weather the storm and hope the voters see through it. And I feel like I need to be able to tell the voters this is what happens in the judiciary if you decide to run for office.
Do you think the intent was in this initial phone call? Because the way that you're explaining it, I suppose it could be just a friendly warning that, hey, this is what's going to happen to you if you do it, or this is what's going to happen to you, I promise, if you decide to run. Like, what was it, a good faith warning, or was it a nefarious warning?
I don't want to get in the minds of other people but the bottom line is,
how'd
that
you take it?
I can say that this evening, I don't think I've ever been so depressed in my life and feeling like I'm making a choice to try to do good for people, and I'm going to pay a price. So I felt threatened, regardless of what the intent was. Put it that way.
I felt like
my career was being threatened.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Judge Dave Larson. He's running for state Supreme Court justice open seat against an incumbent who was actually just appointed, Raquel Montoya Lewis. Judge Larson says he received a threatening phone call essentially saying, if you decide to run, your career is going to be ruined. And you had just said that your judicial rating has actually been dropped. You have no reason to believe that.
Last time in 2016, I ran against an incumbent because of some things were going on. And originally the King County Bar tried to rate me not qualified, even though I had an 8-page resume. I appealed and got well qualified. This time, with 4 more years' experience, 2 awards, one from my Judges Association, 14 additional accomplishments, I'm less qualified than I was 4 years ago. I've only got a qualified rating, which is one step above not qualified. However, the bar that represents black lawyers, the Laura Miller Bar, rated me exceptionally well qualified. So I'm pretty proud of that.
Yeah.
But the thing is that the judiciary itself, and the legal system is managing, it basically is the filter for the public in terms of who's qualified and who's not qualified. And I want a complete revamp of it because it's biased and it's something that's not fair to the folks. And I think that's why a lot of people don't run for judicial office is because of the consequences of doing so.
Why have you chosen not to name the person who made this call?
Well, there's processes that are followed, and I'm on record Last year, I wrote an op-ed when the judge in Seattle was attacked. I wrote an op-ed about how it's not appropriate to attack people publicly and let the processes work their way through.
What's the process?
And I'm consistent with those views.
What's the process? Was this threatening enough where you called
voters,
the police?
The voters created a system back in 1980 where the Commission on Judicial Conduct addresses issues.
Okay, so you've officially filed a complaint.
I'm not going to say one way or the other because it's a private process till the Judicial Conduct Commission decides what to do.
Did you call the police, or was this something that
This wasn't any physical. This wasn't anything like that. It's basically, and the thing, Jason, that I really want voters to know is that the system is that the amount of money that's in the system, the fact that it depends on money getting, and then the people that contribute are the people that have interests in the outcome of cases, and it hurts us all in the judiciary to have that, and the point of my letter that I wrote is that it's the special interest groups that have the ability to destroy careers that's the problem. In the judiciary,
so
and that's more of the problem. Then the call was just more of a confirmation of a system that needs to be redone.
Yeah. This is obviously a big deal. Why did you wait so long to come forward?
Well, I felt like if I waited until after it's one of those things that it's kind of like you run on the merits, you run on your own merits. And I agonized over it for months about whether to bring it up or not. And I did bring it up in editorial boards, not to the degree to which I did in my letter. But ultimately, if I wait till after the election, then it's just sour grapes. If I do it before, then the voters know, and I think it's out there. And if I'm elected, then it'll be number one priority to change the way we elect judges. Because right now, number one, it's too difficult because we don't get enough information to people. And it relies a lot on money, and that taints the whole process. And again, when the only people that are interested in giving money, not the only people, but the main people interested in giving money are special interest groups, lawyers, and things of that nature, then it taints the whole process.
Yeah.
And that's what needs to change. And whether I got a call or didn't get a call is somewhat irrelevant compared to the bigger issue of how judicial campaigns are run. And this particular time, my opponent is getting special interest money. I'm not. I'm specifically not getting special interest money. I think that it's a system that, again, needs to be looked at hard, and it's been looked at before, but nothing ever really got done. They made a few tweaks here and there. I'm in favor of a mandatory recusal rule, so if you get a contribution for somebody, you can't hear their case, and right now that doesn't exist, and that type of thing. So it's something that really needs to change, and the voters deserve more and better. And especially when it comes to getting information to voters and being able to educate voters on the election process. I've actually written legislation for a judicial evaluation commission that would be bipartisan, that would be something a little bit more fair evaluation process than what we have now. And there's all kinds of changes. Some people may not care, but I do, and I think the people that are affected by judicial decisions and see the judiciary the way it is, really care about making sure that we have a judiciary that's independent from expenditures and special interests.
People should care. People should care about that issue, and people should care that you were threatened into trying to give up this race, which means you're probably on the right side of the issues. The website, Larson4WA, it's all spelled out, Larson4WA.com. Judge Dave Larson, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Got more coming up. Welcome back to The Jason Rantz Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. When it comes to most of the statewide races, my assumption is you guys know exactly how you're supposed to vote. But when it comes to some of the Senate and House races, the ones a lot of you haven't been paying as close attention to as you should, maybe you've got some questions. You're a little confused on where to go. Well, good news is we've got some answers. Joining us on the line, the chairman of the Washington State Republican Party, the pride of Puyallup, Caleb Heimlich. Welcome back to the show, Caleb.
Jason, thanks for having me on. Today is actually my 35th birthday, and
nice.
I want nothing more for my birthday than everyone listening to go vote.
That is a weird birthday wish, because I would want millions and millions of dollars, but I suppose yours is more noble than mine.
Yes.
So let's talk about some of the races, both on the Senate and House side. Let's start with the Senate, because there are some really, really tight races. Let's start with District 28 with Senator Steve O'Bannon. He's the incumbent. This is University Place. He didn't have as good of a showing in his primary as he wanted as an incumbent. He came in slightly behind. What does it look like in this final stretch?
Yeah, it is extremely close. This has been the most expensive Senate or House race, the most expensive legislative race this year. Steve O'Bannon is just an excellent senator. He's been fighting really hard for $30 car tabs, for solutions on mental health, and he would be a real shame to see him lose. So if you're in Lakewood, University Place, North Tacoma, make sure you mark your ballot for Steve O'Bannon and get it in. But yeah, it was a very close primary, and we're expecting an incredibly close November.
Well, and this is what we talk about when we say the Seattle creep, because he's going up against a progressive Seattle-style candidate, and that's just not in line ideologically with this district.
Yo, that's exactly right. And if you're in the district, I'm sure you've seen the mail pieces and seen others on his very progressive opponent. This would be a real shame. I mean, if we lose that seat, you're going to see you're going to see the march towards the state income tax. I mean, that's the bottom line. We can't afford to take a step backwards. We need to actually gain seats in the Senate, and we can do that this year. But we can only gain seats if we hold the 28th and hold Senator Steve O'Bannon.
Another one is District 10. State Senator Ron Muzzle is running for re-election, recently appointed after the incumbent stepped aside. This is Oak Harbor. I mean, really, this is all of Island counties and part of Kitsap and Snohomish. Where do things stand with Ron?
Yeah, he's looking good. It's a competitive primary. It's going to be a competitive and close general election as well. But he won that primary by a little over 1,000 votes. So not taking anything for granted. He's a really hard worker.
Mm-hmm.
He's a farmer, deep connections in the community. And so we like our chances. And there's a couple important House races in that district as well. I mean, the 28th and the 10th are kind of two of our biggest districts for this year. So we're feeling good. We've got a lot of people knocking on doors, making phone calls in the 10th district right now, advocating for Ron. So I think we can hold that one. But again, it's going to take everybody getting out and voting.
Caleb Heimlich joining us on the line. He's the chairman of the Washington State Republican Party. Let's go to the 10th legislative district on the House side. Give us an update on where things stand.
Yeah, so this is a split district. So on the one seat, the incumbent is Democrat Dave Paul, and we have Bill Brook, who's running against Dave. Bill actually came out on top in the primary. So this is a seat that is primed for a House pickup. So be sure to vote for Bill Brook, B-R-U-C-H. But his opponent had a voting record that is more in line with Seattle. He was voting for comprehensive sex ed. He was voting to raise taxes. And so getting Bill in there would be a huge step in the right direction. And then in the other seat, we've got an attorney and a local businessman named Greg Gilday.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a hold for us. It used to be held by Representative Norma Smith. She retired this year. And that's going to be a close race as well. So really, we're looking at the 10th as we want to sweep that district. We want to win all three seats there with Ron Mazzal, Bill Brook, and Greg Gilday. And so going to be very close, but I think we have a great opportunity to do just that.
Another one, 44th Legislative District, the mayor of Snohomish, John Kartak, is hoping to be a state rep.
Yeah, yep, that is a very important race, important district as well. So if you're up in Mill Creek, I think Lake Stevens, that's in the 44th, but vote for John Kartak and Mark James. He's on the Marysville City Council. Both of those would be pickup opportunities for us. But so if you're unhappy with the direction we've seen in Washington State, voting for Mark James and John Kartak is a great way to kind of push back and bring some balance back to Olympia.
Another one you had mentioned, the 28th Legislative District, the second position is up. It's Chris Nye, Republican.
Yes. Yeah, both House seats, we've got good candidates. Chris Nye and Kevin Ballard, those are both held by Democrats, so both of those would be gains. But yeah, Chris Nye, Kevin Ballard, again, that's Lakewood University Place. That's a real opportunity to gain some seats back that we had had. We used to be represented by Representative Dick Murray before the 2018 election, but this year, if you're in Lakewood University Place, vote for Kevin Ballard, vote for Chris Nye, and of course, vote for Senator Steve Oban.
So let's talk again about sort of the bigger picture, scenarios in which you've got some races that we understand is going to be a little bit of a struggle for Lauren Culp to defeat Jay Inslee. But it seems like 2020 is that year where maybe you can, in fact, get that upset.
Yeah, that's right. We're hearing from Democrats, from independents, from people that are frustrated. I mean, Governor Inslee has been overreaching. He's been extending his power with no limits. And people are tired of it. And so it is, certainly it's an uphill battle. We know that in Washington State. But Lauren has run a very engaged grassroots campaign at this point with only 7 days to go. The focus is get out the vote. So if you're listening, make sure when you get home, fill out your ballot, take it to a drop box. You've only got 1 week to go. This is already a historic election in the sense that 2.2 million Washingtonians as of yesterday have already voted. That's about 48% of the electorate. It's insane. Like half of the people have already voted a full week before the election, and we can make history. We can flip some of these statewide races. We absolutely need to reelect Kim Wyman to keep the integrity of our elections intact. The Democrats are coming for her and gunning pretty hard. But get your ballot in, vote Republican at the statewide level, and then in these legislative districts as well, because we can absolutely make a difference, but it only is going to change if people vote.
And just real quickly, because it's not just about voting in the traditional sense, for lieutenant governor, we have a write-in campaign going on with Joshua Freed. Now, normally, a write-in campaign is futile. There's no way that it actually goes anywhere. But in this case, you could see a win for Joshua Freed if he gets about 35% of the vote. That's very doable.
Correct. Yeah. So certainly make sure you're writing in Joshua Freed, because you're exactly right. We've got two Democrats, two career politicians, two pretty progressive Democrats running
for
that
office. Very progressive. Far to the left.
Very, very progressive. And Joshua Freed, great candidate. So write in Joshua Freed. Make sure in a nonpartisan sense, vote for Maya Espinosa for superintendent of public instruction. She can win. The Democrats are freaking out there. Vote for Dave Larson for the state Supreme Court. It'd be nice to have one common sense jurist on the state Supreme Court. And then if you're down in Pierce County or Thurston County, it's a similar situation to the lieutenant governor's race, but write in Marty McClendon for Congress. Yep. Both of those write-ins, we actually, as you said, they're, mathematically, there's a chance. It's just conservatives and Republicans, as long as the word gets out and they take that step, fill in the bubble and then write in the name, either Joshua Freed for lieutenant governor or Marty McClendon for Congress, they can win.
So important. If you want to learn more about all of the races statewide that we need to fight really, really hard for, go to WSRP.org. It's the Washington State Republican Party, WSRP.org. Caleb Heimlich, happy birthday, and thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Jason.
The true birthday gift, of course, is being able to talk to me on such a momentous day. So, I mean, really, he's already won the day. You've been listening to The Jason Rant Show on AM 770 KTTH Seattle.